Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
Today on the show, we actually have two guests for the very first time. Brian Castell and Justin Kahns are joining me on the show today. They have a really interesting story. Between the two of them, they own 30 rental properties, so I want to hear about their portfolio. And then I also want to talk about some creative financing. They actually own a business where they lend money, and I want to talk to them about a creative way that you can get financing for a rental property. So let's just get right into it. Hey, guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan.
Take me back and tell me your story. So you guys met freshman year of college?
Yeah, we were basically roommates freshman year and ended up living together all 4 years at William & Mary.
How did you guys start buying rental properties?
Yeah, so my first experience was when I went back for grad school, again, back at William & Mary. And I got my first loan to buy a condo down there. And then it kind of got in my head that maybe I can lease it out.
So were you living in the condo and maybe renting out? Okay,
so I decided to buy a two-bedroom instead of a one, and then try to lease one out to another grad student.
Okay.
And that worked out well. And I got really hooked on it.
Were you covering the mortgage with the rent payment?
Essentially it was, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Exactly.
Okay.
So again, just kind of got hooked from there on how well that was working.
And then so that you started buying more properties then?
Yeah. So after that, I got, I was fortunate. I got $14,000 in inheritance. Uh-huh. And I just segued that into buying another condo right across the parking lot in the same complex and leased that one out and then made some money while I was still living there. It was within the same year, had some extra savings, bought a third one across the parking lot. And just kind of started with three properties right there during grad school.
So you're going to grad school and you own three properties that you're renting out.
Right.
Which, that is awesome.
Which is, you'd think would be the top of the story, but actually the fun part was doing the first contract flip. There was a new development, Newtown at the time in Williamsburg. And I had my agent, I told him to give me a call as soon as the first property came up for sale. It was an in-unit townhouse. And I remember being in the middle of class and I get the phone call and he says, first one's going up. Do you want to buy it? And so I was, you know, getting ready to leave out of class. It's the middle of class. The teacher says, you know, where are you going? So I've got this first property. I got to buy it. It's going to be a great flip. Don't worry. I'll catch up later. She goes, okay. And we had a good rapport with the teacher at the time. So, and they knew I was kind of just in my own world with real estate. So we went over and signed the contract and put down the 5% option to buy it. And then within 6 months of it being developed, I had pre-advertised it for sale. So I closed on it to purchase it and then sold it within the same week with a pre-screened buyer and walked away with another $15,000, which then went to a fourth rental property.
Wow.
So it was a very fun time in grad school. I'm sure I hit the classes sometime.
And then when you guys graduated, did you sell those rentals or did you keep the college rentals?
Yeah. So for me, the great thing about grad school was that it really drove home paying attention to the numbers and trusting the numbers more than what the market was doing. So for me, the rentals that I bought going into grad school was in a neighborhood where the rent prices were significantly higher, proportionally higher to the purchase prices, just in this one neighborhood. The rest of Williamsburg was kind of being bought up at the time. So whereas I was getting a property for $90,000, it was renting for $1,300. Within the 3 years or so, they immediately jumped up in prices to $125,000. Mm. That's when everyone started buying in this one complex. Well, for me, that's why I said, okay, the rent prices are just about the same as mortgages and HOA, you know, condo dues. So that's when I decided to sell, was when everyone was buying.
Right.
So then I took that money, and by that time I was out of grad school. And I started buying in Woodbridge, and this was about 2010 in Woodbridge when things were really low, prices were really low. Again, I just looked at the numbers. I didn't look at what the rest of the market was doing as far as selling and the kind of chaos of a market. I just focused on the numbers. If the rent prices were exceptionally higher than the equivalent mortgages, that's where I wanted to buy.
What were you looking for? Like what kind of numbers did you want to see to know it was a good deal?
Yeah, so back then I was looking at 12%.
Okay.
I was looking for a 12% cash on cash return without property management.
Okay.
Just because there were so few, didn't really need property management.
Right.
But 12% was kind of my key number at the time.
Okay. Then you started buying more properties kind of as luck would have it at the bottom of the market.
Yeah. I started buying in Woodbridge. And one of the best things I did, advice I got, was find a realtor with local knowledge. And I'm a licensed realtor, mainly to have access to MLS. But I found a realtor with local knowledge who could tell me, you know, these are the developments where the builders put polybutylene pipes, you know, those plastic pipes that are notorious for breaking. Uh-huh. This is a very solid neighborhood. This has a high turnover. This doesn't. So I got a local realtor where we literally took a map and we drove around Woodbridge and with my ABC map, and I highlighted the neighborhoods that I wanted to start targeting. And that was where I started picking out the first rental properties I wanted.
And were you buying foreclosures or?
No, these were short sales.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's more for short sales.
So you're buying them off the MLS, putting in a bunch of offers.
Bunch of offers. Yep. Just running up, you know, low offers on numbers that hit my cash flow numbers. Mm-hmm. And some hit and some didn't hit.
Okay.
That's how it went.
Like, how many offers would you have to put in to get a deal?
Well, back then, not a whole lot.
Okay.
Now you have to put in a whole lot more. Virginia is very hard to get deals, but we're essentially doing the same thing in Maryland now.
One other thing that you guys are doing that I think is really interesting and I want to talk about a little bit here is, in addition to buying rentals, you guys also started a business where you're lending money to other investors. Is that right?
I'd say it was a few years after college when it really got kicked off. I started investing in secured notes when I was a kid. And the gentleman that I started investing with became a business partner, when I was 24.
And how old were you when you were investing in secure notes?
I started when I was 13.
How does a 13-year-old learn how to invest in secured notes?
Well, I don't know if the 13-year-old really cared back then, but the 13-year-old's father told him what he was doing with his cash.
Okay.
Basically, long story short, Jewish, had a bar mitzvah, made some money, and I rolled that into a secured note. And then by the time I'd say I was 21, I took all that money out. The money had just, the interest I kept pouring in back into the, into the note, well, into the business that I was investing in at the time. And I bought my first house. When I bought the house, it was pretty close to, low end of the market. I'd say it was 2001, I believe. And a couple years later, I actually got a home equity line of credit, which was insane. It was probably about $150,000 line of credit for a 23-year-old.
Wow.
So I took that money back out. I was borrowing it from the bank at, 4% maybe. And I gave it back to the gentleman that I was investing with. And at that time, I said, okay, explain to me what you were doing with my money for the last, 10-11 years. And long story short, he became a business partner. We started a hard money lending company together. We built it up to about $25 million, and at that point in time we decided we needed somebody like a Justin, who's got an MBA from William & Mary, to help kind of build it to the next level. So he was my mentor. He'd been lending, for years and years, since probably the late 80s.
With the lending business, that kind of gave you connections and networking that helped you buy more rentals. Is that kind of how your rental portfolio grew?
Yeah, absolutely. Once we kind of built up the network in lending, where you have a lot of clients that are buying to flip, but also they're buying to hold on to rentals. Mm-hmm. They want to fix them up, and they were using our financing to fix up the properties instead of using their own cash and then refinancing out later into a long-term loan. Just doing that helped us build up a network, because a lot of people own rentals and a lot of people have different needs at different points in their lives. So there'd be an owner with a lot of rental properties, like two we recently picked up in Maryland, where he needed money to expand his business. So he let a couple rental properties go to us. We bought it, all cash. We got a discount because the realtor wasn't involved. Great cash flowing. He had completely renovated them. You can just keep on picking up rental properties without doing a whole lot of work.
A lot of people in my audience are interested in creative ways that they can finance rental properties. And I think hard money is one of those things that people maybe don't understand exactly how they can use it to their advantage, or maybe they don't even know what it is. I wanted to see if you could maybe walk us through why somebody would want to use hard money to buy a rental property. So the traditional way to buy a rental property would be to go to a bank. Most banks are going to want you to put down between 20 and 25% to get an investor loan. Another strategy would be to go to a hard money lender. So walk me through this. So let's just say that someone finds a smoking deal on a rental property, but that house needs some work. You're going to have to fix it up before you can rent it out. How could somebody use hard money to finance that deal and put very little or maybe even none of their own money into the deal?
Sure. Well, the key word there is if they have a smoking deal. Equity is the real key for us. So we'll lend up to 70% of a property's fair market value.
Okay.
A traditional bank will say, okay, we'll lend up to 70% of the purchase price. So if you do have a smoking deal, say a property that's worth $100,000, and you can get it for $70,000 or $75,000, you only have to put down the difference. So we can lend $70,000. The better you buy it, the less you have to put down. So if you do have a smoking deal, you can almost completely use our own leverage to purchase it.
So you wouldn't so if you found that $100,000 property that you're buying for $70,000, you would lend $70,000 on it and the buyer wouldn't need a down payment at all?
Yeah, they essentially wouldn't. We always like to see for a first time have what we call a little bit of skin in the game, so a little bit of a down payment. But most of our clients, I'd say about 80 to 90% are repeat clients where they've done their first one, they successfully rehab the property and then refinanced it out so they could hold on to it. Then we're not looking so much with skin in the game. We know they're proven and they can come back. And if they're buying it well, we'll finance 100%.
The second part to that strategy, and really the key to the whole thing, is they need to get you guys out of that loan as soon as possible. Say with that example of the $100,000 house that they got for $70,000, maybe they did some work to it, fixed it up a bit. Now the house is worth $150,000. They've got to refi with a traditional lender at that point, and they've just created all this equity because they bought the house for $70,000. Now it's worth $150,000. They've got to get you out of the loan because you're going to be charging them a really high interest rate for that short-term loan. What is a typical rate that a hard money lender would charge for that short-term loan?
Yeah, so the going interest rate for us is about the industry benchmark, which is 12%.
Okay.
That's on an annualized basis. So really for short-term loans, the only way you can really look at us is 1% a month.
Okay.
So 12% annualized is 1% a month. The average time for our loans over the last decade is 6 months.
Okay.
So if someone gets in, they buy it, they use their cash or our cash to rehab the property, bring it to an appraisable condition, meaning it's move-in ready, it can qualify for bank financing. And then usually 6 months is about the benchmark where a bank will say, we'll consider the new appraised value of the property. Not the original purchase price, but the new appraised higher value of the property. And we'll give you a refinance of 80% of that value. So that allows them to not only take out our loan, but in many cases cover the previous closing costs they paid for the loan and some of the cash they put in for the rehab.
Okay. So then when they refi, they've got a regular loan at whatever the market rate is, 5, 6%, whatever it is. And then they could essentially have this 5-6% loan with the equity that was created because they bought the house so cheap and did increase the value by doing whatever improvements.
So if you're buying your own rental property at fair market value and you have to use 20% down with a bank, you're stuck with your 20% in that property for the next 30 years or so, and at least until it appreciates so much that you can maybe get a line later. But if you're buying it using a private money loan, and you're building a lot of equity in a property that has a lot of underlying value, you can almost take all your cash that you originally put into it back out. So if you're buying it for $70,000 and it takes $20,000 of improvements, okay, you're in it for $90,000, but maybe the house value now is $125,000 or $150,000. Well, if you refinance at 80% of that new appraised value, you're essentially taking all that money that you put into it right back out. So now you're not in it for a penny.
Right.
So you can't even do your cash on cash return because there's no cost basis for you.
Right.
So you just leverage that to buy your next flip our next property that has underlying value, fix it up, and turn it into a long-term loan.
If anyone is interested in learning more about this, I've got someone coming on the show next Tuesday that in the last year has bought two rental properties using hard money. It's a really interesting story. He's only had to come up with $1,000 of his own money. That show will be coming out next Tuesday, November 10th. Or if you're listening to this show at some point in the future, you can check it out whenever you want. It's episode number 53. Guys, is this a strategy that you guys are using to buy your rentals?
Well, it's kind of a hybrid of the two. The hard part for us is well, it's not really hard anymore, but originally it was finding the deals that would be good rentals. I'll never forget, it was probably 4 or 5 years ago, our accountant for Restoration Capital said, hey, you guys need to buy a rental property, you know, for tax purposes, basically. So I ended up going to the, one of the local foreclosures and bidding on a property because, you know, that's what all of our borrowers essentially were doing. So I figured I'd do the same thing. You know, it turns out basically a few minutes later, I'm post the auction getting text messages on my phone from our borrowers saying, what are you doing bidding against us? And I'm thinking, well, all we were trying to do is buy a rental property.
Right.
So they perceived it to be a conflict of interest. And long story short, we ended up getting the property. I probably bid way too much on it. But nowadays, you know, we've built off our network essentially. So if we need to go out and get a rental property, we ask one of our clients if they've got anything they're looking to sell, and, you know, place it into the portfolio that way.
So now with your partnership, you know, there's obviously pluses and minuses with having a partnership. What do you guys do if, say, at some point you guys have a falling out or someone decides they don't want to own rentals anymore? Have you guys thought about, like, how you would deal with things going bad?
Yeah, I mean, we have, well, I should say Justin and I have several companies basically that we buy properties in, you know, basically profit sharing through Restoration Capital. We've got management holdings also through Restoration Capital. So in those companies, we have, you know, I don't know, 30 or 40 page operating agreements essentially that kind of dictate all that stuff
that we've
worked out internally with counsel. I also own, you know, several rental properties with another partner that we're 50-50 in, and we just have, I don't know, it's probably a 6 or 7 page agreement that we've typed up. And it actually lays out everything, you know, and kind of we've worked out that we want to keep these things through our kids essentially going through college. And we'd probably sell one off a year to offset college expenses or something like that. And in the event that one of us need to sell sooner, again, all that stuff's kind of laid out in the agreement.
Okay.
And I think that's important for people to do before
totally.
They start buying together.
So do you guys manage your own properties or do you have managers?
We kind of have a hybrid. Generally, we manage everything ourselves. It's getting to the point where I wouldn't say it's out of control, but it's we probably do need to bring on a full-time property manager. Some of the properties that we own that are in outlying areas that maybe we've come into, you know, through loans that have gone bad in previous companies, we use outside help. You know, maybe a property manager will help us find tenants and lease them up, but we'll still kind of pay the utilities and do all that stuff on our own.
Yeah, my preference is, like with the Maryland one that we just picked up, is to get to know the area, get to know the tenants, see what's going on in that market. What are the, you know, if there's crime in the area, what are the regular complaints? How's the building doing? We learned very quickly in two that we just picked up that the HVACs are very unique HVACs that were just made for this condo conversion. So it's a specialty order. So so that's one thing that I can kind of tack now and you know, put to the side and know that for HVAC costs, I can expect them to be a little bit higher. It's a little bit more custom parts.
Okay.
Also just what's going on in the neighborhood, where some of the, you know, the crime levels, what's some of the turnover. So that allows me for the first few months or the first 6 months to get to know an area very well, how it's doing, what are the operating costs. And then the goal is to transition it to a property manager. But I've got a feel now. I've got a baseline, so to speak, of how that property is and how that area is.
Okay. So are you guys looking to grow your portfolio from here? Are you looking for more rentals?
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever there's a good deal, especially in Maryland right now, I mean, the cash on cash returns there are, you know, everything that it was in Virginia in 2008. So, you know, going back to how hard is it or how tricky it is to partner up with someone, I think we have the same mindset that we're not in a buy it and then sell it immediately. We're in a buy and hold situation. So for the Maryland ones, we tried to buy ones where it's exceptionally low and exceptionally high cash flowing, so we can hold it for the long term.
Okay.
And then just steadily build that up. We created a basically a profit sharing plan, our own individual 401k. And instead of doing stocks, you can self-manage it. So we bought small properties in that, and we're growing that basically tax deferred. So all the rent payments don't pay taxes on. So it kind of builds upon itself. And as right. rental income builds, we'll pick up the next rental property and buy that all cash. The only downside to one of those accounts is that you have to take depreciation every year, but you don't get the benefit because you don't have expenses.
And right.
That's the only downside. But if you're buying a property like we are, where it's a condo and the depreciation isn't worth a whole lot compared to the cash flow, then it doesn't matter.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Well, guys, we are out of time, but thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been a really, really good episode. If somebody wanted to reach out to you to find out more about some of your lending, what's the best way to reach you?
They can email us, loans@restorationcapital.com. We can talk to them about anything that they want to talk about.
And do you guys lend just in a certain area, or is it throughout the country?
We lend in Maryland, Virginia. We actually just started lending in West Virginia. We at this point in time don't lend in DC. We've got affiliate lenders who do. So if you know somebody has a request there, we can probably originate it for them and you know push them in the right direction.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.